My name is John Beck, and I'm the co-director of our Daily Work, Our Daily Lives. And that's a program here at Michigan State University that's shared between the labor education program of the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations and the MSU Museum. And this is one of our closing of the year brown bags in our 15th year of presentations and nearly 20 years now of exhibits, film openings, concerts, and other things that we've co-sponsored. Our last brown bag of the series is coming up on April 28th back across the street where we normally meet in the MSU Museum Auditorium, which is a classroom on the second floor. Timothy Messer-Cruz from the Department of Ethnic Studies at Bowling Green will be here to discuss the enduring power of the Haymarket Square bomb, uncovering the hidden history of a failed revolutionary uprising in America. So I'll just hand those, and those can come around the room. So let me introduce today's speaker slash singer slash presenter, Gordon Bach. Gordon hails from the coastline of Maine, where he was born, raised, worked the various boats, whether they be fishing boats, passenger boats, yachts, and other things. But many of us, the reason that we know Gordon Bach's name is because of the music that's come out of that experience. So Gordon has recorded a couple dozen CDs and records over his lifetime, has given hundreds upon hundreds of concerts, written two songbooks, plus a book of poetry. And I know Gordon Bach because of the fact that when my wife was dating me at the University of Michigan, she had Gordon Bach's album, Turning Toward the Morning, which was her favorite album. So early on, I heard all about the wonders of salt water versus the wonders of fresh water for those of us here in the Great Lakes. So Gordon Bach is not only presenting right now, but he's also appearing tonight at 10 Pound Fiddle. And that is at the Unitarian Church over on Grove Street near the East Lansing Library. Tickets, I'm sure, are still available because they always seem to be available when I get there at the door, I hope. So please join us tonight there, too, for Gordon's concert. So please help me in welcoming Gordon Bach, who's going to be talking about songs and stories from working on the water. Gordon Bach.
Thanks. Well, I came from a musical family. All my mother's people sang, and most of them played instruments, and it was always encouraged in that family. My mother's generation scattered all over the world to work, and so they learned the songs, you know, from Italy and Russia. One aunt played a 7-string Russian guitar. And I had occasion to learn how to play that in my 20s. And one went to Australia. And one who didn't go very far, just to California, sort of kept our Scottish connection going by learning Scots songs. They weren't passed down in the family, but she picked them up. So I learned some of those from her, and another thing that I learned from them was not to be afraid of singing in foreign languages. And when you're a kid and you hear that and it's normal in your family, you develop your natural ear, which is pretty amazing. All it needs is exercise. I think we all probably have an ear, and we have to learn our own language. And when we're kids, learning foreign languages is much easier. ¶¶ try to remember a tune, a song my uncle used to sing. I don't know if he'd ever been to Texas, but he called it the Texas song, and I've never heard it outside the family. I'm gonna leave old Texas now. They got no use for the longhorn cow. They've plowed and fenced my cattle range, and the people there are all so strange. And it goes on about saying, I'll say goodbye to the Alamo and turn my head toward Mexico. And but that's the kind of thing they'd pick up. And I learned two different versions of the Golden Vanity from the family. One was, there was a lofty ship and she put out to sea. That one my uncle did. And my oldest aunt did the, was a ship that sailed along the lowland sea. And she had a verse in there I'd never heard anywhere else. And I learned both of those, but when Bob Stewart came along, having learned that, having learned his version out of a book, and he thought he had read the music, but it turns out the person who owned the book later told him, no, that's, you didn't read that music, you made that up. So, but that's the version I sing. And I sailed with Bob over the years, off and on, and actually, the way I sing my song, The Hills of Idaho, is really Bob's version of it, because he took it and straightened it out, and when he sang it, he just made all the ifs, ands, and so I will. He just took the grammar and straightened it out, so it made more sense. So I sing it his way. I suppose I should do that. Well, I'll get into that a little later. But the music that was kicking around Maine when I was young, the radio was just pop music, and I must say, pop music was a little more interesting than it is now. And it's not so much monoculture. And I'm talking about top 10 type stuff. But there was some of that on the radio, and we had a local radio station, and it used local people, and I think a lot of radio stations did. They didn't have these packages that where everybody gets to hear the same thing all over the country. And there was a group called the Old New Englanders, and they actually were a dance group, but they sang some. They sang some of the old popular things. They conscripted my mother, who was really a piano player, but she did play the accordion, to play with them a little bit, but she didn't have the repertoire. But I played with them for a couple of years, various dances. And I think they had a lot to do with my style. I'll play a song. A Newfoundland song, but it's of that style, and a tune we used to play with the old New Englanders. I was the only one under 70.
With you out all day in the foggy dew, deed I am in love with you, muscles in the corner, I took Jenny to a ball. Jenny couldn't dance at all. Sailed her up alongside the wall. Left her there till Sunday. Deed, I am in love with you. Out all day in the foggy dew. Deed, I am in love with you. Mussels in the corner. All the people from Belle Isle don't get up till 9:30. Wash their face in kerosene oil. Polly, you're a corker. Deed, I am in love with you. Out all day in the foggy dew. Deed, I am in love with you. Mussels in the corner. Here they come as thick as flies. Dirty shirts and dirty ties. Dirty rings around their eyes. Dirty old Torbay men. Deed, I am in love with you. Out all day in the foggy dew. Deed, I am in love with you. Mussels in the corner. And it goes on like that. And what thanks. Play the tune. Play the tune. Yeah, this is Raggedy Ann. Ragtime Annie. The way that style developed was that in the summer, my job for quite a few years was I used to work for a man named Havilah Hawkins, and he owned an ex-cargo schooner that had been converted to carrying passengers, and there were quite a few of them around in those days, and it was a lot of mostly friendly competition and interdependence in those days. And I went mate for him in both in the Alice Wentworth and the Mary Day, which he designed and had built for the passenger trade. She was a 100-ton, 83-foot schooner. And we measure them on deck, by the way. We don't include anything that hangs over the water. He played the fiddle and the concertina, and he wasn't a great fiddler. You don't really get great if you work with your hands on the water, because you're mostly working at half of other people's speeds, and. But he loved to play, and we would, if we were sort of within reach of a couple different islands during the week, we would put in there and go ashore and stir up a dance. And I really loved those tunes. And I tried to take up the fiddle, but I couldn't handle the position. And I even got a lesson from my grandfather, who was a world-renowned classical violinist. But it didn't take. But I loved the tunes, and I wanted to play them. So I knew the chords because I'd played with Hawkins and with the old New Englanders. So I just put the tune on top of it and tried to keep the chords running behind it, and so it wasn't any one kind of picking. It was just something I worked out myself, which used a lot of different strokes that classical guitarists don't like. My uncle did show me what he called city picking, and I didn't hear that again until I went to
to work in Philadelphia in the winters. That's where I was born, by the way. And we moved to Maine when I was very young. My father revived a shipyard there, and where they built wooden ships for the Navy, from stuff as small as PT boats to 250-foot coal barges and offshore tugs and stuff like that. Anything that the Navy needed out of wood, like minesweepers, for instance, sub chasers. I don't think they built any of those. But anyway, that was my playground when I was a kid, and that's how I got into working on the water, because that's what everybody seemed to do that wasn't actually building the boats. And that was where I first apparently learned how to swim. I was walking along the side deck of a little boat called the Eaglet from Eagle Island, I remember. And there's a rail up on the edge of the cabin house, and I was just going back and forth, you know, shuffling along with my hands on the rail. And next thing I knew, I'd run out of rail. And I don't remember the must have been like 20 feet that I must have swum into the beach under the dock, under the pilings. But they said I did it. And therefore, I didn't need lessons. But they didn't teach kids how to swim then. If you learned, okay, but they didn't go out of their way to teach them. It's cold water, and the fishermen would say you're just prolonging the agony if you know how to swim. When I was a teenager, you'd go into anybody's kitchen, and if they played guitar, they would sing this kind of stuff. How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I'd do things my way. But little they know, it's so hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind. And I learned all Hank Williams stuff, and because you could really wail on it, and you could, you know, it was easy to harmonize, and it was fun, and I can still sing it too. You don't forget those songs. So in the summers I'd work on the schooners, and then later on yachts, as when somebody needed a hand or whatever, and I wanted to see some different territory, I'd go on that. I took a job once as a mate on a Brixham trawler. They wanted to get her from Salcombe, South Devon, down to Portugal, to Lisbon. And I heard about it, and for some reason they were having trouble finding somebody with my experience. But anyway, I went over there and took the job. And that was quite a trip. She was a good boat. She was extremely weatherly, and had been a fishing boat, and it's about 75 feet long, and of the narrow type catch rigged, and we were hove to in that boat 9 times in the Bay of Biscay. We got on the back end of weather systems that, and the boat was fine with that. You could go below and you'd hardly tell what tack you'd hove to on, except if
But it was hard being on deck. But the boat was just totally comfortable with that kind of treatment. And I learned this song on that boat. Johnny Todd, he took a notion for to cross the ocean wide, and he's left his own true love behind him, walking by the Liverpool side. For a week she wept with sorrow, tore her hair and wrung her hands. Then she met another handsome sailor walking by the Liverpool sands. Why, fair maid, are you a-weeping for your Johnny gone to sea? Johnny's gone, but I am here beside you. I will kind and constant be. Johnny Tubbs, come home. Oh, no, she promises her, I'll buy you sheets and blankets, I'll buy you the wedding ring. You shall have a little golden cradle for to rock the baby in. Johnny Tubbs, come home from sailing, sailing on the ocean wide. And he's found his little false and fair one was another sailor's bride. So all young lads who go a-sailing for to fight the foreign foe, never leave your love behind like Johnny. Marry her before you go.
That's also where I wrote The Hills of Idaho. I was thinking that I wanted to get back there. So in that song, the Plymouth... Oh, the Plymouth girls are fine. Put their hearts in your hands. And the Plymouth boys are able, first-class sailors, everyone. Because we went down to Plymouth to finish up our outfitting and getting her ready for sea. And while we were in Plymouth, this odd little launch comes by, and they holler up at us, is the Yank aboard? And so I went over to the rail, and I said, I qualify. And they said, do you know Kit? And I said, no. Kit? Well, you must. I mean, she's a sailor, and she's a Yank. And... after that trip, I got aboard a little schooner named Surprise, and we took her down to Cape Breton. And the other hand aboard was Kit's brother. I don't even know how I found that out. They must have said Dunbar, and it occurred to me to ask him what his sister's name. Did he have a sister? But anyway. And you pick up some really strange songs. We were hanging out on one of the schooners for a weekend in this handsome, rather small black fella rowed over from a yacht tender, and he'd heard the music, and he asked if he could hang out with us. So he said, come aboard, have a beer. And he was pretty quiet for a while. And then finally, he started to sing. And
he knew a lot of songs, all from his area. He was from South Caicos. So, and he wanted to play the guitar, but he didn't have a guitar. But anyway, I showed him a couple of chords, and at the end of the summer, he came in with his brother. They had a job on one of the big yachts that I think it was a British, from British Virgin Islands, and somebody found him a guitar, and he was a full blown calypso guitarist. I don't know how he did it in 3 months. It was amazing. But so he taught me this one. I asked him, I said, what does it feel like to have your home owned by somebody that lives a couple of thousand miles away? He says, oh, we got a song about that. Small island, go back where you come from. Small island, go back where you come from. When you come by the one and the two and the three, you take in our food and you leave in us hungry. Small island, go back where you come from. Number one, no rice in this land. Number two, no rice in this land. When you come by the one and the two and the three, you take in our food and you mash down the jungle. Small island, go back where you really come from. Winston Churchill, going cross through this English Channel. Winston Churchill, going cross through this English Channel. When you got no guns and you got no revolver, bottle and stick, you can hell in Gibraltar. Small island, go back where you really come from. And he was full of stuff like that, and he... And he had his brother would play the boat. I was on, when they came in the second time, I was on a steel Dutch sloop that I was supposed to take to the Bahamas for the winter. And he and his brother came aboard and they played. He played and sang, and his brother played the boat. He considered it... the whole boat is an instrument, and he would pluck on this and thump on that, and pick up something and tap on, because a steel boat is quite like a drum anyway. So he was trying to make a steel band out of the boat. I don't think the owner liked that very much. And let's see. My brother, he worked a little bit in Europe and came back and worked in Philadelphia. And when I started to go down there to work in the winters, I ended up using his, renting his, the apartment he'd rented. And down there you could rent. If you weren't fussy about the neighborhood, you could rent a whole house for $60 a month and rent the top floor out to somebody for $30, which I did. But anyway, he got married about the time I got to Philadelphia, and moved out to the islands off Maine and went fishing. And so I was, we were always great correspondents, and... he told me just about enough about fishing so that I figured, I think I like my gig as it is. And it was pretty hard there.
But he did that for about 8 years, mostly lobstering and hand lining. And but I had a lot of other friends that were fishermen too, one of them, I still get shrimp from him. He doesn't fish anymore, but his wife does, actually. She goes out with her brother and does everything from lobstering to periwinkles. And another brother of hers gets shrimp, and so my friend Frank, he and his wife pick it and seal it in brine and freeze it. And so we always have a good supply of nice shrimp. I went out. Ordinarily, they worked on the sardine carriers, which are the big vessels, big small vessels that went, that would go to where people had a pocket of fish caught. And they would pump it into the boats and take it back to the factories. and I spent the most of the time. I never fished for a living, but I would go out with them off and on. And mostly it was on the carrier Ida May, and she's a great boat. But once I went out with him, I think it was in February, and I was going through, and he says, come out with us. We're towing for shrimp. So I did. And he and his stepfather were real family to me. His stepfather was Clean. They were both from they were from Deer Island, New Brunswick. And good seamen. I went out one day with them. We were it had been blowing so hard all winter that they'd been having to tow up and down the Sheepskit River and inland, and it was a hard bottom to fish. So we went out this morning, and it was snowing, and by daylight we were out in the river towing. Must have been on some kind of diagonal tow. Frank and I were down below, and we had the net out, of course. And so we were just driving along slow, and he and I were down below, I think, making a cup of coffee. And Cleon, his stepfather, thumps on the hatch, and we boil up there. And he said something. I thought it was anchored. We were anchored, but I hadn't heard any change in the engine. So we come boiling up out of there, and he's cut back the throttle, and what he'd said was tanker. Suddenly there was this gray wall in front of him, and it was a tanker going up the river. Because we didn't have radar in those days. So he backed her off, and the net, you know, went down to bottom and caught a boulder, and it was all over for the day for us. I later wrote this song about them called Frankie on the Sheepscot, and the guitar is just trying to be the monotonous sound of the engine, which won't change, you know, for a half an hour at a time. And the little high notes are, if I can find them, that's the sound of when the cable comes in over the drum. There's a lot of pressure there, and it kind of snaps in the, it's the sound of that. Frankie braids the purse string, Cleon sets the tow. Frankie goes to pick them over in the well. He's never got a hat on, and the snow is all about him.
and it packs around his head like his own skin. Don't I hate this foolish river, Frankie cries, up and down like a yo-yo on a string. Go out in the morning and tear up, mend all your afternoon, and all this dirty river staving by. Ah, but boys, you should have seen him wearing the snow as you would wear your hair, singing it's a hard life for a boy on the gut. He's got the words wrong, but he doesn't seem to care. And the seagulls working easy out behind him. Leon slides the hatch back and he shouts down, boys, we're anchored. You set your coffee down and you go on deck. But the river's humping by so hard, the snow's a flying thick. You can't tell if she's moving or lying still. Cleon winds the wheel and he cracks the power to her. And she pokes her head around, but she doesn't turn. So he takes her out of gear and Frankie goes to try to haul back. He says, I guess we've hooked the dear old state of Maine. Don't I hate this foolish river, Frankie cries, up and down like a yo-yo on a string. Go out in the morning and tear up, spend all your afternoon, and all that pretty river going by. Ah, but boys, you should have seen him hour after hour clean on that old wheel. There's nothing out there but hard times and time in the flying snow, and all that pretty river going by. But my God, it made me wonder, hour after hour, playing on that old wheel. There's nothing to see but hard times and time in the flying snow. But Cleon watches day and night and day.
Of course, I kind of consider spending 6-7 winters in the city a voyage of sorts, because of the people I met. I worked mostly doing light carpentry and stuff like that. I was making good money, either going mate on the schooners or going captain of yachts in the summer, well, the 6 months really. And then I just spend the 6 colder months in Philadelphia. I fell in with a bunch of Mongolian immigrants, and they wanted a musician, so I learned a bunch of their songs and played for their dances, for the little kids doing the traditional dances, and ended up learning a lot of songs from these two sisters that I fell in love with. And one of them was just a treasure house of fairly modern songs, nothing really older than about 200 years. These people had left Mongolia after Genghis Khan's, after he scattered his chiefs, And they were Dirbit and Turgut, and they sort of worked their way west into Russia. And that was all about 400, it started maybe 460 years ago. And they kept their language, they kept their, a lot of their culture, their language was slipping. A lot of the words in the old songs, nobody could translate anymore. And they were wild old songs, a lot of decoration. Also, it's a language that adds things on the front of a word and then adds them on the back of a word and then changes the sound in the middle of the word, you know. And it's one of those languages that would be about as much fun to learn as Eskimo. So I never really tried to learn it, although I can understand some. But any road, I ended up with a lot of their music, not well recorded, but stuff they'd given me, tapes people had made, they'd given me and stuff. When I left Philadelphia for good, I went back to Maine. I gave the stuff to the Library of Congress. And they invited me and my wife to come to their 50th anniversary of immigration. And when we went down there to New Jersey, I discovered that since Nadja had died, nobody had been keeping all this up. And the kids didn't know the songs, the dances anymore. So I got together with a couple younger people that I knew, and I got the collection back out of the library. While I could still remember sounds, I went all through it, cleaned it up, cataloged as much as I could from memory. I also had a notebook full of written stuff. So I got all that to them, into one fellow in particular in New Jersey, and I still work with them once or twice a year, trying to dig more out, and we're unearthing more stuff that's on tape, and the tape is still good enough to make CDs out of. So they're getting some of it back. But it's a real shame to see that powerful stuff go. And I usually don't sing their music in concert. It's kind of a private... To me, it's like when Popeye needs a can of spinach, I sing that stuff. But I will sing a verse of one song, and this is a young song. It was made in Russia. Probably the tune was borrowed from Russian. But it is their Volga boat song, except it wasn't the Volga River. It's called Hatu Hara Olsen, and it is the hard black rope. And it translates roughly as, I pull a hard black rope, and I sing Mother in the far land, I don't forget you. Sanagna is actually more like I embrace you. Well, anyway. But they're towing barges or boats up the I guess it was the Volga, yeah, the mouth of the Volga Basin. It was the Volga by hand. So they had this big heavy rope and some loops hung off it. And they've got those loops around their body and they're just plodding along the old towpath. And Mongolian mules, they called themselves. Atuya hara osigen akeren badge ta to love Akeren Badge Ta to love. And they always sing this one softly. Yijelinye Yirgede Kerloshan And that verse means, while you live here, while you work here, while this river runs, don't forget your people. And really beautiful stuff. Now, that's sort of a very straight Russian style of singing. Their stuff would be more like... And on like that, but even much more highly decorated. I never learned the old stuff, and I am now just daring to try to write some of it down. But I'll need a better musician than I am to hear it and write it down. I can help with the sounds, but not much with all those decorations. And I would say too that from my travels and partially from my travels, at least to Australia and New Zealand and the British Isles, you know, I've made friends in those places. Actually, the time I got around to going to Australia and New Zealand, I was already friends with a lot of people, and we just hadn't met. And I've got pen pals in Scandinavia and, oh Lord, Italy and all sorts of places, people I haven't met, but they send me music and their own traditional music. And it's a great joy to have those connections. I'll play you a Finnish tune that I think is just lovely. It's called Kulan Polska. I tell you, that'll lay your quills down. It's a real meditation. So should I ask if you have any questions?
Well, what I'd like to do is turn on the microphone and have people ask the question so that they're actually on the...
Tape in the library. We're recording this, so you'll be able to actually hear Gordon on the MSU Library catalog, and we can tell you more about that later. But at this time, let me just remind you to sign in. I'll just send this around again. If you haven't already, just send that. And then if you have a question or a comment, please raise your hand, and I'll hand you the microphone, and you can say it or ask. Who's got a question? Questions?
They need the pen in your
hand. Oh, there's a pen. The pen. Questions. Anybody have a question or a comment? Right here.
How did you get into singing the songs about the seals and the otters?
Well, there's always a certain amount of lore laying around about seals. Otters, I just thought were cool. And seals, and, you know, seals will respond, say, to a whistle, anything where you jump the notes. They like sounds that change up or down, you know. You can really hold their attention with music. And so there's kind of a mystique about them. And, of course, among fishermen, I'll eat 10 times their weight in fish a day. They tear up the nets. Seals don't need to tear up nets if they want fish to go in over the float line. And, you know, and they eat, what, about 8 pounds of fish a day, you know, a full-grown seal. And then I heard that the most famous British Isles song, The Great Silkie of Sulskerry, and the rest was my imagination. And I get dreaming about it, and I go through times when I pay a lot of attention to my dreaming. And a lot of Seal Giro's hymn was straight out of my dreaming. I'd wake up with melodies in my head and sounds and stuff. And I seemed to know what they meant. But that's about it.
You wrote the song, The Hills of Idaho, and then along came the Idaho Lullaby, and I just wondered, was that a sequel or just something that had another spinoff that just had to be written?
That was, I had a small catch at the time, and I had a young fella. He started hanging around. He was a shipyard spook, as I had been when I was a kid, and lived right, you know, on the same street. And he started hanging out with me when he was 7, and that lasted till he was about 14. So he must have been about 9, and his folks were happy to have me just haul him off. And, you know, he was good on the boat. He was learning stuff. And he was below with me, and he'd had kind of a hard day for some reason. And we were sailing to Idaho, and so I wrote that. And I'm still, and I've only seen him about 3 times as an adult. He doesn't live in town anymore. And I never asked him whether I ever sang that song to him. I still don't know whether he's heard it or not, or if he'd even know it was about him.
Other questions?
You mentioned that the old Texas song you learned in your family, I remember singing it to a somewhat different tune in grade school in the 50s.
Really?
Yes. I'll take my horse, I'll take my rope, and hit the trail upon a lope. I'll bid adios to the Alamo, and turn my head toward Mexico.
I have heard that. That is familiar. Well, I stand corrected. Thank you. That's great.
Let me run it back here. I think that's
But what's the rest of that? What's the big first line?
I'm going to leave old Texas.
Oh, it's the same, those words.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. There's somewhere else that melody is reminding me of another set of words. But that's fairly common. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I recall reading that you were, maybe hearing that you were on the Clearwater, which Pete Seeger organized for cleaning up the Hudson River, and that you were the only one with any sailing experience. So do you want to comment on that experience?
No, the captain was quite able. He'd never sailed anything exactly like that before, but he'd sailed schooners before, and I'd sailed schooners, and that was just a one-masted schooner with a real weird balance. But she was fun to sail. Yeah, when she was building, Toshi Seeger contacted me, and I helped rig her and get her ready for sea, and did compass trials with her, and then the bunch of us took her down to Hudson, and we did concerts on the way, and that was interesting. It was fun.
Other questions or comments that folks have? Do raise your hand if you've got one. I'm going to, well, we got one back here.
All right. So when you were first starting out, how did you, what was your motivation to learn, you know, the folk style, to stay in that style? I mean, you could, I guess you would have the choice, being as talented as you are, to play any kind of style of music. Why did you stay with that style instead of playing like popular songs and that sort of thing? Do you see what I mean?
I do this for sustenance, and there's just more meat in this stuff than there is in a lot of the, I find more meat in it. There's more meat for me, let's say. And it's kind of like, I thought, you know, I'd like to play an electric guitar. I ought to get one or build one. And these guitars are, as a result, well, not this one, but that guitar is a result of the way we were brought up. If you don't like what you got, build something better and learn how to do it. And there's always somebody around to show you how. There was. And I thought, no, let me learn everything I can about the acoustic guitar first, and then I'll pick up an electric, and I've just never learned enough yet. So it's the same thing. I just find a vast depth in traditional music. I think it gives you a clearer picture of history than the history books do.
Now, I would bet my bottom dollar that people would love to hear you play a tune or two more before we break this up. And so, all right. Take us out, if you would.
One of the people that I've had a delightful time with is a guy named Dave Goulder. And he's a songwriter. But I've also known him as a master, a dry stone wall builder. He's from the north of Scotland, originally from Lincolnshire. Nottingham. But he's taught dry stone wall building all over the English, in America and all the British Isles. And he even helped to develop the standards for American wall building, because our needs and our stone is different than the British. He writes some really neat songs, too. I've sung a lot of them. And I've toured with him both over there and over here, out through the Midwest, actually. And as a result of one of our tours, he got a job building a wall in Minnesota, he said, that you can see from space. He moved something like 450 tons of stone by hand over the course of coming over here a few years. And anyway, there's another gig that, and he can still play guitar. It's amazing. Of course, a friend of mine said to me recently, whoever put in the same body a musician and a woodcarver wasn't thinking. But Dave wrote this. I just love the pictures in this, too. Now, most walls are built. The reason that there are holes in those Galloway dikes is that sheep won't climb something they can see through. And so Dave made this. These miles of dry stone walls that hold in plow-brown fields and kingly halls, the dead of centuries and hills of sand, the stones that bind them are proud as what lies behind them, and varied as the counties in this curious land. Thank you.
In Cumberland they built them on hills that surely must have killed them. Through broom and juniper and stunted ling. Two thousand feet over, with just a tarpaulin cover, they crouched in wind and rain and waited for the spring. Somewhere in there. In Aberdeenshire valleys, the fields were only open quarries. The stones were gathered up and made to stand. But with every plowing, you'd think it was stones they'd been sowing. The walls grew fatter here than any in the land. The Irish built in courses of single stones the size of horses, of glacial boulders without edge or face. And if you could view them above with sunlighting through them, you'd swear the hills were edged with broken granite lace. When Pict and Viking took stone pages from some prehistoric book of sandy flagstone under Orkney fields, they lingered a while and left history in the islands. This is what water, wind, and time and toil reveal. These miles of dry stone, oh no, from Yorkshire's something lanes through Derbyshire. From Shetland's salty rocks to Devon lanes, just look and discover three walls, two walls that lean against each other. You'll never see them in quite the same way again. These miles of dry stone walls that hold in plough brown fields and kingly halls, the dead of centuries in hills of sand. The stone that binds them is odd as that. I can't remember. And varied as the counties in this. In this land. I don't know if it just went away. So there was that. And we haven't even gotten into ballads yet, which is, I do a lot of traditional ballads, and most of them in English. But that's a whole subject. I think one of the things I did when I went down to the cities was I took a ballad course in a college there, and as a matter of fact, that's where I ran into the great Silky Sewell Scarry, and it got me interested in seeing if I could find some ballads from my own area. And coastal Maine, I was looking for old folk songs, you know, traditional stuff, and there just wasn't that much of it, because it's always been a high traffic area, and that's not where those songs hang out. If you go then you find a real community that can keep a tradition alive, even though they were quite a mobile community. But not along the coast until you hit like Nova Scotia or Newfoundland.
they're sufficiently isolated by themselves to maintain a tradition like that. We do have our local heroes. Great head of songwriters like Bonnie Quinn, who mostly wrote to existing tunes popular at the time, like the Strawberry Room. He was a generation before me. And I didn't know him. I know his son, who goes around and reads. He doesn't sing, but he reads the stuff, and it reads just fine. And it's all about local happenings and stuff. And you can get some pretty good physical history out of those things, like the Gray Engineer. We had old gas boat engines called Gray Marine. And he wrote one about trying to get one of those things going that is a riot. And it has to do with, finally, the thing that gets her going is homebrew, but it blows her apart and knocks him, blows him out of the engine room. And it's a classic. It's wonderful. But, you know, you can practically learn what to do to get an old gas engine going from that song. And that's worth something right there. And, you know, and there are people writing now like Mary Garvey, who's kind of documenting her history on the West Coast. And she wrote one that I sang, that I've probably recorded three or four of her songs. What was the one about Willapaw Bay and you have to pick oysters when dig oysters when the tide is just right. Sometimes it comes in the middle of the night. And it's about when they had quite a good oystering business there, and the Japanese had a lot to do with it, the Japanese settlers. They brought their seed oysters over, and we brought seed oysters from Long Island. And between them and the small native oysters, they hybrid a very, very good oyster in this wonderful area called Willapaw Bay. Then when World War II started, we rounded up all the Japanese and put them in prison camps. And the women that were left, and the Germans too, the women that were left kept the oyster business going. And Mary's song about that is really good. You can learn a lot from it, and it's about a people you don't hear of, and that we don't talk about. So, I think there's a lot of depth in this.
Well, let us thank Gordon for a wonderful.
Thank you.